In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And welcome. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast, and we are live. Thanks, everybody, for being here. So, just so everybody's aware, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a fun sort of multicast live reading of Bright Star and other works of fiction from the Energemetra 6 universe. And we're going to keep this fun. We're not going to try to do an overly professional, nobody screws up, everybody's uptight sort of thing. We're just going to kind of wing it. We'll go back and fix things if we find problems, and we'll go from there.
Sounds
and
good.
Welcome, Mel. Thanks for being here with me. And I have my uncle here for reading one of the parts today. And so I guess let's just get started. This is the first book we're going through is Bright Star. And I'm going to start with the acknowledgments. So this is Bright Star by me, Jared N. Michaud. And I always assumed that my first book would be something close to a solo project and that I'd wind up self-publishing it. This was never a conscious thought, just one of those baseline assumptions we all take for granted. I find myself gratified to be wrong. Looking back, I find the number of people I have to thank is much longer than I expected, and I guarantee I will forget too many names. If you're among them, I apologize. My gratitude is far greater than my memory. My deepest thanks go to Mary, my wife, and best friend for 15 years. I couldn't have done it without you. And my gamma readers, who for now must remain nameless. You're never too young to contribute. And a couple of those gamma readers will be joining us for the podcast now and then to read a couple of the parts, which is going to be fun. Greg, my friend, alpha reader, and 11th hour artist. I'll never remember which ideas were yours and which were mine. Thank you, brother. My beta reader in chief, Nick. I think at some level I'll always be more proud of others' contribution to my work than my own. I'm officially dedicating the name Adamant to you. Uncle Greg, you've always been more helpful than is strictly comfortable or easy, which is, in the final estimation, a good thing. Your eye for detail saved me at a critical moment. I'm thankful for you. My parents, you've always supported me, even when I couldn't see it. No thanks can be enough. Mom, who would ever have thought all the effort you put into teaching me grammar would end this way? Dad, I still say stories are engineered as much as written. Your eye for the big picture is more useful than you know. My beta readers, in no particular order. Zach, Luke, Kimberly, Adam, Justin, Aunt Susan, and Uncle Bob. Sorry you'll have to wait for the next book to get the rest of the story you already read. Sarah, my 11th and a half hour artist. You are the professional. Now I have proof. And she's responsible for the graphics for our intro screen and everything else, by the way. She is my artist for this E6 stuff, and she is awesome. Joel, you made the key connection. I'll always be in your debt. My editors at Inspira, thank you for coming through at the last minute. This book is undeniably better than it would have been without you. Morgan James Publishing, I didn't think there was a publisher that held my vision for how books should be created. There is. They accepted my work. I will always appreciate it. Finally, and most important of all, to the Father of the Heavenly Lights, in whom there is no shadow of change. The ability and the time to write this story were a gift, and the inspiration was always from you. Thank you. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. So, the first part of Bright Star is a letter from Paul Kasizia to the coming Bright Star, written on the eve of the disappearance.
I do not know who you are, but I know that you will come, my compatriot. Siva Radding tells me he has seen a vision of a great light hurtling into our universe, bent upon defeating the enemies that beset us from every side. Siva may be odd, but his visions have never failed to come to pass. Thus I write to you, Bright Star, to give you whatever blessing I may, and perhaps to arm you against the evils that you will face. I have lost all hope. The Nosifer and the Ilvane, and especially the Opterians, plague me. Even those who are still truly human are fractious. All the mortal powers are like flies waiting to bite me the instant that I turn my attention to something more important. It has been 1,000 years since we fled. We brought so little with us. Our history has been lost. We have only the dreams to remember Earth, and they are nothing but terror. I thought we had left Lattice Roland and his ilk behind when we escaped Earth, that was. I was wrong, or perhaps I misunderstood the threat from the very beginning. I fear I have failed this universe over which the Light Maker set me as guardian. They have won. All I can do now is delay them. But I didn't set out to complain to you of my own problems. I feel the burden of the looming darkness. I have to warn you of the evils I have failed to overcome. Do not foresee this universe becoming safer when I am gone. I hope I may forestall its destruction, but I cannot imagine prevailing against the many-headed void spawn that besets us. For every head I cut off the beast, it grows 2 more. I must leave vanquishing it to you. I have entrusted this letter to Terron, my son, in all but blood, you see, but they have taken even my children from me. If you are able, do me this one service. Find them. Find John and Rachel. Free them from their prison. I know they will work at your side. Look for the mysteries. I have hidden them well, but allow hope to lead you and you will find them. They may aid you in your fight. The mysteries are far too powerful for me to allow them to fall into their hands. Thank you, Bright Star, for your part is to complete the task that I have so thanklessly begun and at which I have so spectacularly failed. Yours truly, Paul Kasizia, Guardian of the Remnant.
Collected by Terran Galton, Keeper of the Mysteries, in the year 337 NST. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. They're the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every order goes to a pro-life cause. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 with your order. Okay, so, starting out, this is the prologue.
All right. Okay. Autists are the ultimate square pegs, and the problem with pounding a square peg into a round hole is not that the hammering is hard work, it's that you're destroying the peg. Paul Collins.
crack, crack, crack. The sound invaded Nate's world. It became his world. His voice was hoarse, and he sounded desperate, even to himself. It was too much.
Oh, Nate, you know that's not going to change anything. You just have to deal with it.
Adrian's voice cut through the sound, but it didn't relieve his mental pressure. His head was full of it. It overwhelmed him.
How am I not even getting paid for this?
Adrian muttered. Her self-absorbed gabble was exactly the right counterpoint to the racket, completing his internal torture. Crack, 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 crack. Nate's 12-year-old body started rocking, his hands over his ears. It was all he could hear. It was too loud, too loud, too loud. It played over and over in his head, washing over itself until he couldn't tell whether it was coming from outside or inside. He wanted to break out of the loop, to stop hearing it, to escape the sound of the pneumatic nailer on the roof above. No use. Crack, 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 crack. Stop, 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 stop. He had to make it stop. He didn't realize he was hitting his head on the wall until her hands were on him, turning him, pulling him away, holding him. The pressure inside eased a bit, but pain filled his head. Pain, overload, stuck. He leaned into her subconsciously, cradling his pain, head in his hands. Silence, blessed silence. Relief, but not enough. Thoughts collided, his mind broken. The pieces ground together like gritty glass. Nate barely noticed when Adrian released him, getting up to respond to something else. The door opened. Muffled voices found their way into the world. But sanity was slick, and he made no sense of them. They rang in the emptiness that surrounded his helpless thoughts, still caught in the incessant cracking that echoed through him.
Ma'am, is everything okay? We thought we heard... Was somebody banging on the wall?
He started rocking again, slowly, the motion providing some modicum of comfort as Adrian responded. The words were clear, though they seemed a million miles away.
Oh, it's okay. He's autistic. The noise brought on an episode.
A spurt of bitterness injected itself into him at her words, but it was pure emotion. Words were still far beyond him. The other voice might have responded, but Nate's moan drowned it out. He did notice when Adrian sighed behind him a moment later. She was holding something in her hand, and she said softly,
"Alistair, yeah, it's me. Look, he's done it again. This roofing is just too much for him. He can't." "Yes, I know, but look, he's getting too big for me. He was hitting his head on the wall again, and I can't stop him. Look, they told me they'll stop for now. I'm going to put him to bed. Get here when you can, okay?"
Then she was pulling Nate to his feet. His body wasn't responding right. It never did, but this was worse. Moving disturbed the little stability he had achieved. Pain still crowded his thoughts, and the patient, complicated motions necessary to walk properly. Well, he might as well have been an infant again. He lurched, and she gasped and swore under her breath.
"Nate, you have to help me. You're too big."
She trailed off as she drew him upright and started half-pulling, half-carrying him along. Flashes of wall and floor and ceiling came to him through the hopeless muddle. Then they were at his bedroom door. Speech escaped him again. His head hurt, if anything even worse, and his vision was blurry. Adrian pulled him gently through the door and across the room, both of them stumbling as his clumsiness almost pulled them down. Somehow they made it to his bed, and Adrian, half falling and half dragging, pulled him into it. There she left him. He curled up, hands cradling his head, his body in a fetal ball. He heard her mutter as she left the room.
Witless.
That tone, the disgust in her voice, was even worse than the word itself. Autistic. An instant and an eternity later, all was quiet inside him, and only a little of the pain remained. Nate bit his lip, his eyes filling with tears. It wasn't fair. Why did he have to be this way? He could see how everyone else lived, how they talked, how they could do all the things he couldn't do. Except he could. Any of the things they could do, he could see how to do them. If he stopped and focused very carefully, he could do them too, but only with the greatest effort. The smallest things threw him off, stopped him. What he wouldn't give to be like Father, or Hector, or the people across the hall, able to walk and talk and tie his own shoes, even if it meant giving up the patterns. Nate wasn't stupid. Most people thought he was stupid, but his mind worked just fine. He just couldn't make his body do what he told it to. And he sometimes lost himself in the patterns. Even Adrian thought he was stupid, though she tried to be kind. It was her job, after all, to be kind. But she couldn't hide how she really felt, even when she tried. He was the stupid autistic she was supposed to take care of while Father went to work. Nate's eyes started to explore the familiar walls and ceiling of his room as he stretched out on the bed, his mind following the whirls and sweeps of texture across the walls and onto the ceiling. They were maddening, those swirls. He could stare at them forever. One swirl leading into a wave, leading into a knot, and back down into a swirl. But if he wasn't careful, it would put his mind into its loop again, and sometimes he couldn't escape. His eyes found the frame on the wall with its curious dark wood and shiny mirror-like glass. The frame had strange, mythical beasts carved into its edges. There was a fawn on one side, across from a centaur and a mouse, lovingly shaped into one bottom corner. The book inside the shadow box frame was the same as ever, its leather cover lighter than the wood of the frame, but still dark enough to drink in what little illumination his nightlight grudgingly provided. The book held patterns of its own. The cover was real leather, and its pattern was organic and almost, but not quite, random. Nate could see that pattern, how the lines must intersect if the leather were larger, how the parts fit a hole that wasn't there. Nate stared at the book, its gold lettering spelling out Alastor Raylan, Father's name, in the bottom corner. Mother had given it to Father long before Nate was born. His mother, whom he couldn't remember except in flashes. Kind, gentle, the living incarnation of love and softness, had left when he was very small. It was Father's story, Nate knew. Once Father had read to him from it, a story of power and darkness, and a sort of strange magical energy. Nate loved it. Father liked the patterns too, even if he couldn't see them the way Nate could. And the story was full of the patterns, even if Father hadn't been able to finish. The patterns that made up the world sang from its words and pages, and Nate wished he could get up to read it. But if he took it down, he might break the frame, or the glass. The pain in his head was growing again, getting worse. He could hardly stand it now, and his eyes twitched shut for a moment before opening again, still fastened on the book in its frame. Nate moaned with pain, but his eyes were playing tricks on him. The book was shining. No, the frame was shining. There was light coming from the wood, and the glass was glowing. He squeezed his eyes shut and moaned again, but when he opened them, he could still see it. The light grew brighter, and Nate put his hands to his head again and squeezed his eyes shut. When he opened his eyes, there was a blinding flash, and the world went away. Part 1. Bright Star. Interval. The crystal floated through the blackness of space. If you believe in fate, it could only be her cold hands that pushed it into proximity with the lone vessel to pass through that volume of interstellar void. If you believe in the Lightmaker, he was most assuredly responsible for the luminous, impossible enigma's peculiar trajectory and timing. Only purpose and foreknowledge could have placed it where it would be noticed by that tiny man-made vessel. Whatever moved the crystal, however unbelievable its presence, the true enigma was its occupant, imprisoned in its impenetrable facets, like an insect in amber. Any memory he once possessed had long since fled. It was easy to let go of such things here. The entirety of his past became an incomprehensible blur. Even time itself, our inseparable companion in the odyssey of existence, had lost its grip upon him. His awareness was a dream of a dream. Self was dissolute. He had drifted in the void for unmeasurable eons, becoming no more substantial than the surrounding emptiness. Time slipped around and through him, first frozen, then moving so fast, reality blurred into a haze of past, present, and future, all running together like raindrops on the window of his being. Moments or ages, all was incomprehensible except the unrelenting drag of Entropy's talons upon the crystal prison. That presence was the essence of decay, distilled to sentient awareness. The universe's inevitable death fixed its gaze upon his soul through the crystalline facets around him. There was a profound horror in its glare. By rights, madness should take anyone with so intimate an awareness of the end that awaited all things. Even madness was beyond the scattered consciousness of the boy in the crystal, floating through space. His existence seemed a vector, a line connecting two realities, resolving itself at an almost imperceptible rate into something it had not been before. Slowly, awareness tightened along time's inexorable passage until it intersected. The vessel approached, and his awareness coalesced further as its vector intersected with his, and it drew him into itself. Finally, as the darkness of the void gave way to light, an infinity contracted and narrowed into a finite space around him. Awareness faded, and he dreamed. Even his dream was a tortured throwback to the unfathomable timelessness he had just left behind. In the dream, he was again without self or reference, with only the very forces of nature for company. Staring at him through the facets of his reality was the hideous face of Entropy itself. His prison shattered, and everything outside was inside. He screamed. It was inside of him. The horror invaded his being at every level, overwhelming him. He lashed out blindly, flailing in pain and panic, trying to repel the primordial force that assaulted him. And that concludes our reading for today. We will read chapter 1 next week, God willing, and onward from there. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Mel. This has been fun, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Me too.
All right. I guess we will see you, everyone. And thank you for being here.
Thanks, all.